What we tried to do a little bit on Monday was talk about the crisis of our planet right now and of the seeking of the church to find our place in the critical work of this generation, which is the healing and restoration of the earth and the transformation of the way we look at ourselves as human beings on the earth so that other generations may live. It gets to as simple as that. And what we talked a little bit about on Monday was just beginning to raise the questions, what is it that the church can do that no other company of people can do? This is a very enlightened community of folks here. There's a lot of things I don't have to say to most of you that if I were in other settings, I would need to say. I don't need to quote to you statistics about global warming or the ozone hole. I don't think I need to let you all know that the decisions that we make in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years are very critical. And I don't need to tell most of you that the lifestyles which those of us in the developed West live are ones that are really raping the rest of the planet, and therefore one of the things that we will need to begin to do, and to some degree this community embodies, is begin to make some sacrifices. Sacrifices in the way we choose to live. And we talked a little bit about that on Monday. We talked about the fact that if we were to quote-unquote develop the rest of the world, raise them to the level of living that we live, that we would destroy the planet in 10 years. We are a very tiny minority of the people of the world, and we consume, depending on which resource you're talking about, significantly over half of the raw materials of the planet. So what I want to do today is begin to talk a little bit about the parish. For those of you who like philosophy and theology, you may begin to doze off today. Because I'm going to have much less of that today than I have in other classes, though we're going to start with some. For those of you that like concretes and you like specifics and you like talking about community life and how to get things going, you're going to be very happy today, because that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what it takes to begin to get some kind of environmental spirituality going on in your parish. But again, before we do that, you always have to start with who we are. And so I just want to run by some doctrines and words and biblical terms with which we are all familiar, and we begin to look at them in the light of environmental spirituality. And I did a lot of this last week, and part of my bias is that I'm not talking about a new theology, I'm not talking about a new spirituality, but what I am saying is that our existing understandings of a lot of critical Christian traditions and doctrines need to be expanded. So, you know, everyone always wants to say, well, if you love animals, you must not love people. Well, that's baloney. Or if you're concerned about the earth, that must mean you don't care about the homeless. Well, that's nonsense. Environmental spirituality always is a both and, never an either or. And for that matter, that's another distinctive role that the church plays in the community, because I don't know what part of the country you are from, and we will find that out a little bit later, but certainly in any community in which I've really lived, polarizations tend to happen. Environmentalists versus loggers, Sierra Club versus people who fish. And at its best, the church is that reconciling love of God for all community, which refuses to be placed into dichotomous either-or situations. And that is another distinctive contribution of the church. When we, a number of years ago, we had Paul Winter do his Earth Mass, Misa Gaia, at St. Mark's. And our community regularly on any Sunday morning between all the six services has up to 3,000 people. Christmas, we've got 1,400 people packed in there. Easter, it's usually 1,200 at Easter. For Paul Winter's Earth Mass, we had 1,200 on the inside and 800 on the outside. Just absolutely mobbed. And it was marvelous, because he did the Misa Gaia as a Eucharist. I mean, it was a worship service. And though 98% of the people in there were not people who darkened the church door on Sunday morning, they participated in that service. And and everybody was there. And that is one of the unique places that the church plays, is that we raise this issue in the context of peace and justice and love for all creation. So let's talk for a minute just briefly about these all very pregnant terms. I want to start with hope, because something that I found in the last few years as I do some work outside the church is there's not a lot of hope out there. There's not a lot of hope out there. You don't have to be well versed in the statistics to be scared. And one of the things we said on Monday is that people tend to fall into two camps, and then a lot of us sort of go in a circle. One is in denial. You know, there's nothing going on. There's, you know, things are going to be fine. There's always plenty of land. Blah, 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 blah. Some statistics say there is no ozone hole. Well, I don't know what statistics they're reading, but anyway. And then the other side is, and there's a lot of hopelessness in that. And then there's also a lot of hopelessness in some of the good folk really working hard. Some of my friends who are environmental professionals and are non-Christians are working like crazy and really scared at the same time, because they feel like any one small thing they do is really a drop in the ocean against an ocean of people who don't care and people who are violating the earth. So hope is something that we believe in. And before I go down the list, I want to make sure you're very clear on this. I'm not saying that we have hope and they don't, okay? I am saying that we are a place and a community that witness to the hope. Because we are like everybody else. We go in and out of denial. We go in and out of hopelessness. We go in circles with our own cycles of activism and rest, advocacy, and pulling back. But the wonderful thing about being a part of a community of faith is that I don't have to be hopeful all the time. You don't have to be faithful all the time. That's the wonderful thing, that if no other time you feel in worship, you have a sense that a community greater than yourself, and therefore a God greater than ourselves, gives us the hope. And through the grace of God's love, we are given hope that we do not have. So I want to make sure you understand I'm not assuming we're all saints here. Okay, so hope is the first thing. Faith is the second thing. Faith in what? Faith in something bigger than ourselves. Faith in the belief that we are not alone in this enterprise. I'm sure that there are many generations of human history that have lived through terrible times. Any student of history knows that we are not a people unique to facing a sense that the end of the world is coming. In fact, significant portions of both the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament were written in times where there was a feeling that the end of the world was coming. And so we are not alone, but we are also who we are. And it sure feels like this has got to be about the worst thing that the human race has ever faced. I know I feel that way. I mean, I read about the Black Plague, and I read about horrible things that happened during World War I, and my father is a Jewish survivor of the Holocaust, and so I have an intense sense of the reality of the hell that was the Second World War. And yet I also feel, as a person heading into middle age with two small kids, that the age in which we live is a very scary time. And so my faith that I am not alone, that there is a God of all creation that is a part of this dilemma in which we find ourselves, is very reassuring. Because if I thought it were all up to me, or if I even in a great place like Holden Village, where I see all of these committed, grounded people, if I even thought it was all up to us, I'd be pretty unhappy. Because here especially, you have a sense that, and in my eco-spirituality group at St. Mark's, I get real hopeful. I think, gosh, people are changing, things are really going to be different, we're all going out there. But then you don't have to be out of your little groups long enough where you realize, particularly with the political climate in the last 10 years and then this last war, really, we're living in a climate in our country that is not hospitable to these issues. And part of it, to use biblical language, the powers and the principalities are really fighting it out right now about these issues. Mm-hmm. And we are still, people committed to these issues, are still a very small, and I hope growing, but still a minority, and that has to be faced in this country. So faith in something larger than ourselves is critical. And the most important, and we all know, is that one of my colleagues at St. Mark's, John Houston, who's a man in his 60s who's got more energy than I do, wonderful man, preached a sermon a while ago I'll never forget, and I forget the context. It doesn't really matter. He's the kind of guy that preaches in images, and none of it holds together, but it's all wonderful. But it's not linear. It's not really going anywhere. But you get a lot from what he says, and at one point it's somewhere in the middle of that marvelous sermon. He said that Christians don't really have to worry as much about being believers as lovers. And I thought, I like that. And I think particularly when it comes to creation, that the most important place to begin and stay and end is to fall in love with the earth. I have a woman in my congregation who's in her late 60s, and her husband's a man of some means, and I'm beginning a new project in the fall, and I'm doing the uncomfortable work of looking for monies to support my work. And she was saying that she had no problem. In fact, she was one of the people that went down to Ocean Shores a few years ago with me and cleaned birds oiled by the last oil slick in the state, large one in the state of Washington. But she said, my husband's a different thing. But then she said, you know what? Something's happened. Well, there was some Canada geese outside their summer home on Bainbridge Island, and who gave birth to some young. And she, the wife, began to just put out things for them. And she said, one day, the mother and the chicks took off and didn't come back. And she said, you know what? He got really worried. And then they came back the next day, and he was so happy. And she said, I was so surprised, but ever since then, he's been more open to hearing me talk about these things. And I thought, that's it. You know, if I could pick one thing I could do, it would be in my work. It would be to find ways to give that kind of conversion experience to more people, because that man became a changed man and no longer was his wife sort of sentimental, romantic, flaky, you know, on these particular range of issues, because he had fallen in love with these birds. And it doesn't matter what it is. It might be a tree. It might be something that moves the heart. And that's love. That's what we hope for. That's what we hope will happen. But as we all know, it happens one by one. It happens one by one. Just like falling in love. It happens one by one. Okay, another few things I want to run through real quickly that I think are helpful. In Romans, the passage from Paul, be transformed by the renewal of your mind, has always been very powerful to me. And it's one of those scripture passages that no matter what time I am in my life, it hits me in very important ways. And it seems to me when we're talking about love and about the kind of experiences that change the way we look so that the earth is no longer something that we just drop things onto and dig things out of, but something precious and beautiful and a gift. What we're talking about is a process that the New Testament calls transformation. Transformation is not something we do to ourselves. Transformation is something, in Paul's thought, is the power of God. So that's the most important thing to remember. Transformation is not something that we do to ourselves. In some sense, then, if one were to ask, what is the purpose of Christian community, or what is the purpose of the church, it's to be a place that can ready ourselves for grace. I mean, we can't make it happen. Lord knows we clergy try. We can't do it. But the church is that community that readies people for transformation. Digs, you know, think of yourself as a garden. Ready yourself, open yourself for the receiving of God's grace. and then is a framework to interpret that transformation as it is occurring and put it into action in some way. Again, you can tell I'm definitely a person of worship. Worship is that context par excellence in the church, although I agree coffee hour is a close second. It is that context in the midst of the cycle of the church year, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow, the cycles of Advent and of Christmas and Epiphany and so forth. It is that context which then gives us a way to assimilate and act out the process of the receiving of grace or transformation, which is, again, haltingly in little bits, not always, is a part of what it means to be a person of faith. New creation is another Pauline theme that I think very much fits into environmental issues. Again, on the outside world, there's really a sense of very linear time. It's a culture that's bound into linear historical time. These things happened, this is what's happening now, and here's the future. And of course, there's a great truth to that, although any physicist could argue with that, and any Christian or person of faith can argue with that. What Paul is saying is that in the midst of what we perceive as normal chronological time, there is a different time, kairos, God's time, the kingdom of God, which is, and this is a mystery, I'm fiddling with words the best I can, but it is another kind of time, another kind of reality that is infusing itself into the present. There's a tension in Scripture between the sense of the kingdom of God as something to come and the sense that the kingdom is already among us. And I think that insight is a great comfort to all of us in this particular age in which we live, where although it's very important to realize that the scientists' prophetic warning that the next 10 to 20 years in terms of species extinction and just go down the line is very critical, in order to, in the midst of doing our work, it's also, I feel, very comforting to me to know that there is another time, another healing, another power, another reality, which Paul calls the new creation, which is already at work, so that my work and our work is not just ours, but is a part of the power of God, which is already a part of what we are doing. And that leads me to the third one, and I'll be real brief on this, but this is part of our culture is a very, and although the church is accused of this too, is a very dualistic way of looking at life, spirit and matter. And the Christian tradition insists on what's called the resurrection of the body. Now I'm going to be very, very careful here because there's ways that people of faith can talk about some of these things in such a way that they can justify why you might as well rape and plunder the earth because it's all going to be terrific in the end anyway. You heard that? You haven't heard that? You don't have any fundamentalists in your town? Well, there are Christians that I believe are wrong-headed on this point that insist that you don't really need to worry about what's happening now because in the end we're all going to go to heaven and there's going to be this great rapture and it doesn't much matter anyway and life in this world isn't the most important thing anyway. So with that caution in mind, I do feel, however, that this notion of the sense that, and it's connected with everything else I'm trying to get at, is that there is a reality greater than that which we know, and it includes physicalness. I mean, I find no particular comfort in thinking that elephants, I've never seen an elephant except in a zoo, but I love them, that elephants are all somehow going to go to heaven and all the elephants that are slaughtered, and even if the last one's gone, they'll all be in heaven. I don't find that particularly comforting because I want there to be elephants here. But I also know that at the rate both Asian and African elephant populations are going, there's a fairly good chance that by the time my kids are my age, there may really be just a handful left, and that's just part of the way it is. I find comfort in this, and I find it most beautifully told in a story in C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicle, The Last Battle. Have any of you read that? That's the best. How many of you have read that?
Not too long time.
You need to read fairy tales. Read the Narnia Chronicles. It's the best theology. I read it as a kid, and I've never read any better theology since. But what he talks about is this terrible cataclysm at the sort of end of historical time, and the good guys losing. The good guys losing, and the bad guys losing too. And really, and then just as Revelation and parts of the Hebrew scriptures predict, a terrible tumult of the earth itself. And but at the end is resurrection of the body. Little Reepa Cheek, that wonderful talking mouse, gets his tail back. And wonderful talking animals that had been killed are back, and they're the way Lewis describes it, they're more bodily than ever. You know, they're not ghosts, they're not phantoms, they are alive. And when I feel at my most despairing, I find this very, very helpful.
And I also think that's something that, again, properly interpreted, the culture needs as well.
And quickly, these are my three other basic theological presuppositions. Most of them, none of them radical, but some of them not too common. In some way, the sense that God creates all and that there is some image of God in all created things. And I've got a very non-heretical quote from St. Thomas Aquinas. Okay, now that is standard fare. Because God, and sexist language, but here it is, because God in his goodness could not adequately be represented by one creature alone, he produced many and diverse creatures, and hence the whole universe together participates in the divine goodness more perfectly and manifests it better than any single creature, whatever. There it is, okay? There it is. So that's my response to the Holden theme. I don't know how, but theology doesn't talk how about anything. How language is not theology. But I believe that to be true. I believe that an image of God is reflected in all of creation. God loves all. We don't hear that much in our hymnody and our prayers. And I don't know whether we believe it or not, but I believe that it is true, that particular to each creature and each part of creation, God does love all. I can't believe in a God that loves only one of his, her creatures. And if love, then suffers, because love suffers. That's part of what love is. That's a big part of what love is. If loves, then God suffers with all, and God suffers for all. When James Parton Morton, the Dean of the Cathedral St. John of Divine in New York, who's the is the church which as long ago as 15 years ago on St. Francis Day, has a procession of animals down the middle of the nave, you know, elephants down the middle of the nave. How they get the elephants up the steps of that cathedral, I don't know. But he's the person who had an artwork on display at the cathedral for a while that got people even madder than the Christa. He had a woman on the cross, and that got people pretty upset. But then he had the earth on the cross. That got people even more upset. But I believe it's true. God's suffering for all of creation, that not only our sins and our pain were borne by God, God's self, but that in some way the travail, the groaning of all creation is borne by God as well. And then finally, and this goes back to all of these, that all of creation is included in God's purposes. This is very, very doctrinally correct, but doctrinally unemphasized. We normally think of the redemption, to use a heavily laden word, of humans. The coming to wholeness, the forgiveness, the restoration, the healing of humans. But I believe that all are a part of that. So, that's more time than I wanted to spend on the theological part, and I do want to get on to talking about parish organization, but why don't I just stop there and be quiet for a while and see if
you all have any response to what I said, or questions or comments, or anything.
I can ask again who you were reading.
St. Thomas Aquinas. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think, I'm pretty sure it's from the Summa Theologica. Where, I don't know. And this is from a document that's in the reserve file. This is the Episcopal Church's first attempt at a national document on these issues. It's pretty good. It's going to get turned down by convention this week, but...
Mm-hmm. You say an image of God is portrayed in all creatures, and it would be in all living things, like... plants, and you mean everything on the water?
I'd say so.
The water, the trees.
That's my feeling. What do you think?
I do. I think so.
I think both their molecular biologists and physicists would have a hard time drawing a line between what's alive and isn't. Isn't that right, to some degree?
Right.
And what's moving and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't know how to not draw the line. I wouldn't. I don't know. What do the rest of you think, or other?
Well, it's an all ecosystem, so one mm-hmm. part of it supports another part of it. So
right.
You're right. It would be hard to say which part you're
living. So if nothing else, it's supporting something else that's mm-hmm. living.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we go around the room and say our name, and what I'd like to know is what you would like to see happen in your parish on these issues, or what one thing going on in your parish around these issues is something that you're excited about. Does that make sense? And then I'll start my spiel a little bit about St. Mark's and some of my experiences. So your name, where you're from, and either something you'd like to see happening or some one thing that is happening.
My name is Mary Barbary, and I'm from Ephrata, Washington, which is a small, 5,000 people community near Moses Lake. If you're familiar with that area. Our church, obviously, is not a large church. It's a Disciples of Christ, Christian Church Disciples of Christ. Mm-hmm. And I am, as of January 1st, became the chairman of the board, or we call it moderator now to avoid the sexist language, I think. Moderator of the board. And this is exactly one topic that's on my list of things I want to accomplish during the years, to start some kind of environmental awareness in our congregation, because I feel it's definitely lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw this on the board, I thought, it's wonderful.
Great.
Come up here and be able to get some ideas.
Good.
I don't know that we are doing anything so far. I haven't put my finger on it, at least. Matter of fact, we're still using styrofoam cups at coffee hour,
yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
we need to make some awareness.
Every beginning is a beginning. Great, thank you.
And I'm Colleen Albrecht, and I'm currently from Kent, Washington, but I've just spent the last 8 years in Southern California in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And I left there just about the time they started putting the water restrictions on, and my girlfriend's visiting from there, and she can take a 3-minute shower. And I'm kidding myself, thinking, I want something to jab me with a sharp stick, so I thought I'd come here and see if... And I don't think we're doing anything in our church, although we've just joined a new church.
Mm-hmm. What's your church?
Cross and Crown in Kent.
Mm-hmm. That's Lutheran?
Yes, Lutheran, yeah. And we had belonged to a small mission church in Southern California, and they definitely weren't aware. A lot of people in Orange County are quite a bit of consumers, and a lot of the churches down there. we live really close together. But the problem being is that you get a lot of people there that are quite well to do, and they're almost like they were isolated. Now I think this last 6 months it seems like people are probably a lot more aware of it. Because of the drought, all of a sudden we've been living in a desert. I mean, it's always been a desert, but you just use all the water you want, everybody has a swimming pool, and you just didn't seem to be, our church particularly did not seem to be aware of social issues or ecological issues. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, I was there all that time, and so now I'm back into the Northwest where a lot more social issues are prominent.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't find myself doing anything, so
right.
I'm just looking for that little love spark, I guess.
Right.
I am from Orange County. And I'm
going to
consume everything.
Yeah, you're right.
I belong to Mount of Olives Lutheran Church. which has a, in Mission Viejo, and we have a activist minister, very much so. So much that the church periodically tries to pull him out.
Sounds like a great guy.
He is, you'd love him.
He's just, he'll do anything. Unfortunately, he's not a good speaker, and he doesn't always get his ideas across too well, but he does have some great ideas. He does keep the social, he has a social action committee that he tries to manipulate without being obvious. The church does do a fair amount of supporting of the Santa Ana Soup Kitchen, and it does a fair amount of working with supporting an individual in kind of a tertiary fashion, somebody that works in the grape fields in northern, the agricultural fields in the San Joaquin Valley, which is kind of an awful place to be for migrant workers. So there's some things going on. Unfortunately, there is this major problem in our church, in that we tend to be too much of Orange County consumers. And I disagree with that. I don't think Orange County, even though we have to cut back a lot, I mean, people really aren't, they're cheating. They're walking down the street, people are watering their lawns, which is crazy. Yeah. And I even kind of added some water to my swimming pool.
A lot of their parishioners have come over to our old church because of the problem with their pastor being an activist, and our pastor is more of a basic, you know, he doesn't rattle in cages or strip any.
So it would be, you know, it's nice to see that there are some things happening even in an Orange County church. The unfortunate thing is there's still got to be a better way to get across the message. So. Curiosity problems on my part.
Great. I'm Jillie Meyer. I'm down the hill in Wenatchee, and I go to Grace Lutheran Church, and we've started some of the things we've done away with. Styrofoam cups, we're using all recyclables. The cups we're using are, you know, kind of keep washing. I'm not so sure that they're doing a whole lot in this socially, but when you said about water, makes me feel guilty because there we sit on all this water down
we'll
here. We're still taught to not waste, because if we waste and then the next person doesn't have enough, so I don't shower a whole lot either, even though we have lots of, we have irrigation. But I also watch that, and so, you know, like our McDonald's are using all recyclables. They're going into that, and the tongue itself.
Well, they can just stop making hamburgers.
They need them.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and what is it about the hamburgers? Well, no, the French fries, you know, they use the kind of grease that isn't, you know, doesn't cause, you know, cholesterol to rise. But the town itself, there's a lot of talk about, you know, we have to cut back and we do a lot of things, but there's a lot more to be done. Working towards the idea. But we did away with our styrofoam more than a year ago.
That's a good start. And it's a very visible start.
Yes,
which is one good
thing. What we use in paper products are the kind of things, you know, that you, I mean, that are recyclable for.
Yeah. Right.
And the paper, the, you know, stuff that they've used for printing, you know, it's written on there, it's recycled, you know, it's been recycled.
Oh, they're using recycled. Oh, that's a big step for a
product. Yeah, so we're doing a lot of things like that. I'm not saying that they use all that, but it comes out where they.
Right.
So it's, they're working.
That's a good step. Great.
And very active church. We have 950 baptized members.
But
we have a lot of active people.
Great. Good news.
Yeah. Well, my husband and I go to the same church. that's cool. May not always be that way, but it is right now. But one major glimmer of hope at Mount of Olives that Tom didn't mention is that in November, for the last 8 or 9 years, there has been an alternative Christmas fair. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we think we're going to run it this year, but it's. It, of course, caters to the mentality of the Orange County person, and it's buy, spend. But it is consuming, it's buying gifts for people by making a donation to a group. Mm-hmm. And what we do is just set up booths around the church, and you can buy a tree, and a tree is planted somewhere, and then you give a card to whoever you would be giving a gift to that says, a tree has been planted in your honor, Merry Christmas, you know. Or buying an animal for Heifer Project, or buying a literacy packet for Laubach Literacy International, or buying a square foot of affordable housing for Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. And we made $5,000 last year, mm-hmm, in one day for all those various organizations, and a lot of people participated. Wow. And increasing awareness of not just consuming to consume.
Right.
It's a lot of fun to give somebody a dozen chicks.
Yeah. Yes.
Wonderful.
Good job. Great.
Sandy?
I'm Sandy Nelson from Chicago. I belong to an Evangelical Covenant Church, which is a small denomination branch off of the Swedish Lutheran Church. But having spent some time here at Holden, I realized just how human-oriented our church, the church I belong to, is. And part of that is living in the city where, you know, trees and there just isn't much green. But I'm going to be the co-chair of the Board of Christian Education this next year, and I would like to start some, not only our environmental issues, but more eco-spirituality, bring, mm-hmm, that as part of worship, not always human, but all of creation is part of our worship. So that's
great.
I'm interested.
Well, I'm going to do, I think the next session is all just going to be on worship. So.
Oh, good.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Catherine Bimmer, and I'm from Cheyenne, Wyoming. And I belong to St. Paul's Lutheran Church there, a very conservative, church. Lots of older people. We have quite a variety, but I mean, we have old to young, but a lot of old heads that have been there, and it's been that way, and it's fine for them. And Cheyenne is behind the times, basically. You know, well, I guess the West is, kind of. But we have started, some of the people in Cheyenne have started recycling. We don't even have recycling at all, but we're trying to get that going. Not through the church, though. Mm-hmm. But in the community, there's infighting with the mayor. You know, all of that political junk that holds you back. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's possible. Mm-hmm. I don't even know where to start.
Right. It's hard work. Find a friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you should have advice. Find a friend right away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name is Mary McLeod, and I live in Langley, mm-hmm, in south of the island. And I go to Langley United Methodist. I was raised a Lutheran, but I crossed over. And I'm really fortunate to live in a beautiful spot that I live in, and surrounded by by lots of people who are very conscious about taking care of the earth already. And our congregation, I kind of can say that the congregation when I first came was very much like what you sounded like. And over the last 8 years, and especially this last 1 year, mm-hmm, we've just done amazing things.
Mm-hmm. What do you think has changed there that has made?
In the last year, we've had a new minister, and he's absolutely marvelous. Mm-hmm. Real active in social ministry, and in his and careful in his dealings with relationships and people getting along, and I think that because of that, and even before that, a lot of young people have come in, a lot of people have come into the community and to the church and gotten involved and kindly helped the older people learn about not using styrofoam cups, and it's been really wonderful because they just, oh, we shouldn't use styrofoam cups. Oh, I didn't really know that. And it was nobody really. I don't know. I just think that it's evolved in everybody, an intergenerational, mm-hmm, relationships.
Yeah.
happening. But the ministers had a lot to do with this last year.
Great. You've got a very active group at the Episcopal Church, St. Augustine in Freeland. So that might be another suggestion for you is if you can't find anybody in your own congregation, go see the clergy of other congregations and just ask them, is there anybody in your congregation that's interested in these issues? Because you may, A, be able to do some things ecumenically, and B, have a support for you.
I think our ministers would be willing. One of them has talked to me about recycling. He was interested in the committee and so forth and asked me some questions.
Good.
But I think they're afraid to rock the boat.
Right.
Well, tell them you'll do it.
Well, I certainly agree by you asking the clergy for certain things, then they're not the ones that are producing it.
Let me be the
bad guy. That's right. And at least recycling. Well, we can talk more afterwards.
Well, I think the ecumenical idea is good too, because we have done things with Episcopal and
Great.
Rudy. Well, I'm Rudy Edmond, and I am by profession an earth scientist, so this is very close to my heart. And when I have had a chance to teach this kind of thing at the college level, university level, and now I'm trying to put my thoughts into some writing that hopefully will promote some of this. But we belong to our congregation, which is on the edge of our campus at Thousand Oaks in California Lutheran. And we have a congregation that is very conscious of our problems, socially and environmentally and so on. One of the things that we have been able to establish there is a study session between two services. We have an early service and a late service. We have an hour. And we have forums that are ongoing that relate to a variety of issues, but certainly very much at the center of much of it is things that we're talking about here that are environmentally related and that sort of thing. And that has been very productive. And it's good because my hope and belief is that if there is hope in getting things turned around, it has to come at the grassroots level. It has to come on the everyday people and their attitude, how they feel about it, because if they don't feel that there's something that is wrong and something that needs correcting, it just won't get corrected. That's I think that's the reality. And at this point, as you point out, a lot of people just feel that, well, I'm too small, I can't do anything, you know, why bother? You know, particularly I feel that the young people are the ones that are really picking up on this, and they're teaching us what has to happen, and we better listen. You know, at my age, nothing really can happen that's going to affect, you know, what happens in the rest of my life. But these young people see that there's a real problem ahead of them. And I think when we get that kind of consciousness into the church and into the congregations and into the young people, they'll move it. And they'll bring the rest of us along. And so I think that's the real hope that I see. So, you know, I have been trying over the years, because I've been at home for a long time, as some of you know, and my feeling has always been that we could do things at Holden that you can't do as a congregation. And, you know, we can do the kinds of things we're doing right here and in the community. And this has a replication back into the congregation. So, you know, we have pushed hard here on these kinds of issues in the hopes that we can spread the word back to the churches, and that's been very very encouraging to see what has happened. And now, some of you may know, there's a book on reserve or on the shelf over here in the bookstore. We had a session in 89 on Christian theology and the care of the earth. You know, and you can pick that up, browse through it, see if it's something you want to buy and take back to your congregations. But there's a lot of good thinking that went into some conferences.
What's the name of the book?
Christian Theology and the Care of the Earth, Care of Creation. And it's a book like that. That's, I think it's $10. Mm-hmm. And it'd be a good thing to bring home. Mm-hmm. You know, I've given one to our pastor and to the committee that deals with this kind of thing. And it's a good way to spread the word. Things can happen, can change. And it's a grassroots thing.
Doris.
Ditto. I'm in the same congregation, so my thoughts are very similar to Rudy's.
Do you think being on the edge of a college campus is a real advantage in that respect?
Yes. Well, for instance, we have 13 ordained ministers in our congregation.
Good.
And any number of professors. Mm-hmm. The congregation is made up of professors and ministers. So you expect a better quality of thought along these lines.
Those of us out in the middle of Central Washington, maybe we use it as an excuse, though, because Wenatchee is only 50 miles away, and she sounds like they're doing wonderful things. But
yeah,
we have limited resources.
Starting too.
Pardon me.
I did it just starting, yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the kids they're 4-H kids or some of them out and pick up trash, and then had to start it. And it's in small ways, but it's catching on, and they're teaching it in the schools and working with it in the schools. Mm-hmm. They have their containers for this, that, and the next thing, and they're not using styrofoam in the kitchen anymore, and I just see it all over on a small scale, basically in a mushroom.
And I don't think we should ever assume that nobody cares. I think a lot of it has to be an awareness, and honestly, there are people out there that aren't aware that styrofoam cups, and a lot of people think that plastic bags biodegrade, and really all they do is just break up. I just read that over in the bookstore and thought, hey, gosh, you know, because I was using plastic bags again because I thought they were now biodegradable. And
you know, one of the single most wonderful things you can do for someone is take them to a landfill.
Mm-hmm.
Our spirituality group at St. Mark's went to the Cedar Hills landfill outside of Seattle that takes all Seattle's garbage, goes to Oregon.
Yeah,
King County's goes, and it is the whole size of this hole is the size of a town. I mean, literally,
it's huge.
It's just amazing. Let me just run through some of these things about getting something started in your congregation. One is simply gather some folk together. The way we got St. Mark's group started is I simply put an item in the newsletter, anyone interested in environmental issues and spirituality, come meet. We met for 2 hours, 50 people showed up. We simply asked the question, why are you here? And that's how the group started. We went around the room. You wouldn't believe, I mean, it brings tears to my eyes, just think about it. One woman said, you know, I grew up in New Jersey. This was the year that the summer was really bad and all the garbage was coming up on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I went back to New Jersey and the beach I played on is closed. Again, love, falling in, having an experience. Some other woman said, you know, that she'd been a member of the National Arbor Society for years and simply doing that one thing then unlocked her. Someone else said, it makes me so mad that we come to church and we pray for everything but not the earth. Just ask the question, why are you here? Get a sense of where people are. I think sometimes just issuing the invitation and making the connection, people will come out of the wall. So gather the people, give them an opportunity to come together. Begin and end with prayer, always important. Always make sure anytime, do anything in the church, but give it a context in prayer, because that's the distinctive thing the church has to offer. Just in the going around the room, part of what happens is you not only get to know the people, but the people get to know each other, and they find out, oh, there's a person I can talk to about some of these things. Second thing, and this isn't necessarily in order, but evolve an emphasis. And the key word
is the word evolve. Our group's been going for 3 years and we're still working on it. In other words, it's not going to become clear right away what it is that's a common thing. Often, even if it's a small congregation, if you've got 10 people there or 50 people there, you have 10 different ideas or 50 different ideas. But get a sense of where people's energies are and let that proceed over time. You will need to, but part of the struggle will be right away. One person's heart's been most moved by oceans, another person's heart's been most moved by endangered species, another person by the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, another person's a political activist. And so you can have a wide variety of things. Let the emphases, plural, evolve over time. Don't try to come to any kind of consensus right away, but try to evolve some kind of emphasis and have some steering committee or somebody that is responsible for keeping things moving and according to what people are saying they want to put their energies into. Because you can't do it all. And if you're not careful, especially on these issues, you're going to get in and you're going to feel real bogged down right away because it's all going to hit you with too much and you're going to get into helpless again. Under that, realize that it takes time. You know, any group takes time. To develop a sense of group, to develop that sense of emphasis. It takes time, and particularly since there's not going to be probably anybody in that group that's been in such a group before. I mean, we've all been on CE boards, we've all done stewardship, we've all done blah, 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 blah in churches, but no one probably has been in a group like this. And although there's a ton of books coming out and some wonderful things from Holden and some great theology just coming out in the last few years, it's all very neat and tidy and organized, and life is not neat and tidy and organized, and church groups are not neat and tidy and organized. So realize it'll take some time, and that's okay. It's new to the parish, and there are no models. There just aren't a lot of models, and that's why if you can find any other congregation, your denomination or other, in your community, that can be a big help, particularly if you're the person taking leadership. It'll be nice to find somebody else taking leadership. I'm going to go through this real quickly now because we don't have much time. We'll do a little bit more of this tomorrow. Trust your gut. Real theological language here. Mm-hmm. Trust your gut. You know, go where the energy and the passion is in your group and trust that. Because, again, remember what we had up on the board at all. You don't have to do it all. If you've got some committed, energetic, key leadership type people, you know, one kind of fair can change the outlook of the whole congregation. You know, one really good recycling project. And for you as leader, that might mean sometimes you got to back off because maybe where some of your energy is into one kind of thing, but some of your key leadership's into other things. So sometimes that means moving back. So trust your gut and the guts of your folks. Stay local. And by that, I don't mean don't think globally and act globally, but I also mean it's real easy to get all out there and ignore the community you're in. And part of what that means is paying attention to what some of the issues might be. It might be toxic levels in the waters, it might be oil spills if you're a shoreline person, it might be landfills leaching, who knows what it is. But try to stay local as much as you can because that can be the way to engage people too. So what's right for your community. Try to make connections with other parts of the church, and this is further down the way a little bit, but we call them vestries, your governing board, stewardship, you know, there's lots of potentials there. We found at St. Mark's that getting in touch with the church school right away was real important because the kids were already getting a lot of stuff in school. So there are ways that you can work with CE people in your congregation and begin working with young people, presentations with youth groups. We had storm drain stenciling projects with our youth groups. That's where you stencil the drain. It says, dump no waste, drains to lake. The kids loved it. Yeah. And you get the kids, you get the parents. Okay, so connect with other parts. Don't be intimidated by big churches. You know, if there's a St. John the Divine in your neighborhood doing all sorts of incredible stuff, don't be intimidated. Do what's right for your place. And then just one more, and then we'll finish this up later. Fifth one is be spiritual. And by that, what I mean is always remember that you're a church group. And that's gonna be very distinctive. Likely, the people you're going to attract to this ministry are either already giving money or donating time to environmental organizations, or you may get some environmental professionals. You might get people who work for the
city and water, or you're gonna attract some people that are already doing this work. And part of what they need, they may not even be able to name it, but part of what they need from the church is spiritual nurture and refreshment. It's just like Holden is always trying to remember that it's a place of renewal. And remember that always, that what you're there primarily to do is feed people spiritually, make the connections with the issues. But the distinctive thing that the church does is what we were talking about before. And this is a lot harder. I mean, it's a lot easier to just focus on projects. And the projects are important, getting the recycled paper, getting the styrofoam cups, working with all that stuff. But always remember and work on this. What is it that you're doing and can be for one another? And invite one another to call you on that. What is it that we can be doing as a Christian community? And you're going to thereby be feeding yourselves as well as offering something unique to one another and to people coming in that no environmental organization does. So, and we'll finish this up next time. Thank you all.